Good morning and welcome to the Horses and Life podcast. Today is Wednesday. Last night we had our first ranch roping practice at Dublin Gap Ranch. We had a good time. It went well. We had some people here that had done some team roping and calf roping, and so they got a chance to do things in a little bit different way with their horse and did a good job. And then we had some people that had done some pasture roping type things and ranch roping before. And then we had some people who had never done any roping at all, and their horses are kind of getting used to cattle, so we just had a chance to get them started. And there wasn't really any teaching going on per se. There wasn't the clinic. We weren't really trying to have it real organized to tell people what to do. It was just more like a little practice to give people a chance to be around it and exposed to it. And then for the people that hadn't done much of it before that did some roping, then we, there was some a little bit of direction when it came time to the roping part of it. So we all were on the same page, but it went good. And everybody had a good time. And cattle are a little less fresh than when we started, so that's a good thing. And all the horses did good too. So I have a clinic this week here in Pennsylvania, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which is November 8 through 10, I believe. Other than that, I've just kind of been business as usual. I've just been here working in Pennsylvania, riding the ranch horses and cooling off a little bit, but not too bad. So today, you're going to be listening to an episode with Dave Stamey. I recorded this about a month ago during the ranch clinic here in Pennsylvania, and I was super excited to get Dave out here for the ranch clinic. You know, he was so personable and easy to be around and easy to deal with and easy to do business with. He came out and hung out before the concert for a little while and visited with everybody, and then he hung out afterwards, and a lot of people got a chance to visit with him and talk to him, and I know he sure enjoyed that. So for those of you that aren't real familiar with Dave and his work, I'd like to kind of just read a little bit about him. And this is from his website, so you can check any of that out sometime. Cowboys and Indians magazine has called him the Charlie Russell of Western music. Western Horseman magazine has declared his Vaquero song to be one of the greatest Western songs of all time. True West magazine named him the best living Western solo musician 4 years in a row. Dave Stamey has been a cowboy, a mule packer, a dude wrangler, and is now one of the most popular Western entertainers working today. He's been voted 7 times Entertainer of the Year, 7 times Male Performer of the Year, and 5 times Songwriter of the Year by the Western Music Association. And he's received the Will Rogers Award from the Academy of Western Artists. He's delighted audiences in 23 states. I'm pretty sure, by the way, since they've written this, you can now say 24 states, because I think that was Dave's first time to Pennsylvania. He has delighted audiences in 24 states and finds that he prefers this to being stomped by angry horses. I hadn't read that before, and yeah, I'd say I would prefer that too. In November 2016, Dave was inducted into the Western Music Hall of Fame. I think somewhere on my website or on the newsletter earlier this year, I put out there that quote from Cowboys and Indians magazine that Dave has been called the Charlie Russell of Western music. And somebody sent me a message back and asked me who Charlie Russell was. And I'll just let you guys look that up if you're interested in finding out who Charlie Russell is and why that would be such a high compliment, someone getting compared to that or being having an analogy towards that at all. So anyway, Dave had a new album that just came out a few weeks before we did this interview. I remember briefly seeing it online or somewhere, but I had not got a chance to listen to it yet. So anyway, I got one of his albums at the concert. So the day we recorded this podcast, I picked one up. And since then, I have been listening to it. And after he left, the next day or 2 days later, I put it in the CD and I put it in the CD player in the truck as I was heading down the road. And I could not express how happy I was to find out, because I didn't know until then, that this album is totally acoustic. It's just Dave, a little bit of background vocal, a time or two, and just him and his guitar. And it's really cool. I wished I would have listened to it before, and I would have asked him a little bit more about that and how that all went, how it was recording that before we had this interview. But anyway, I love listening to acoustic. And of course, that's how his concert was when he came and sang. And there's a lot of good with the whole band and the music and the different things that go along with that. And you can get a little more of a story into a song, I think, with other instruments. But I think somebody who can really play the guitar and really sing like Dave Stamey, it's really cool to do an entire album acoustic. And not a lot of people can do an entire album acoustic because they need all that other stuff to really keep the quality of their music going. And somebody like Dave is can pull it off however he needs to do it. So anyway, I'll let you guys listen in. I hope you enjoy it, and I hope to see you all down the road again soon. I bring you Mr. Stamey. Okay, here I am with Dave Stamey. Dave, thank you for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. It's my pleasure.
So I'm just going to kind of tell you guys what Dave and I were just talking about, but it's going to be a fun interview. Again, I like doing some of these interviews when I really don't know the person that I'm interviewing. Briefly met Dave in Elko, Nevada a couple of years ago at the Cowboy Poetry Gathering. He was singing there for the crowd and got to visit with him a little bit. And I did the fan thing, and I got a picture with him, a selfie with him, and he was real humble about all that. So anyway, Dave, tell us a little bit about you and kind of how you got started doing what you do for a living.
Well, it's been kind of a long trip. I was ranch raised and was interested in music at a young age. But I sort of didn't pursue it seriously. I did for a brief period of time right after high school, but I got tired of playing in bars. So I quit that, and I went to work packing mules for various outfitters in the Eastern Sierra, Nevada mountains, and started playing around the campfires for people. And it just sort of snowballed from there, basically. That's what happened. That happened. I've been doing it for 25 years, and I have no other marketable skills, so this is what I do.
So this is what I do. I can relate. And that's the beauty of it. A lot of your music is campfire music. Even if you hear it on the radio or you hear somebody playing it somewhere when I first got introduced to it, and you just kind of think that's the kind of song you just hear some guy singing around the campfire. Of course, the quality is better than average. The average person singing around the campfire, in my opinion. But it's just that type of wholesome, good music that I think a lot of people can relate to.
Yeah, I look at it as a celebration of the rural American West, and I've kind of made it my life's work to celebrate that. And in as much as that's probably the most underrepresented portion of our population right now, because you never hear about them, you never see anything about them on CNN or MSNBC, and so I'm just one of the guys running around telling their stories. That's my job. My job didn't exist until I invented it, but that's what I do.
Right. I like that. My job didn't exist until I invented it. Mm-hmm. You know, I get a chance to go and talk to different people, different places. I was in Europe for a while this summer, and I'll be working somewhere. Even people that ride horses sometimes, a lot, you know, and trail ride and do different things. And people that I used to do a lot of horse showing, and I'd run into those crowds. And now I do a lot of this more type of stuff. And I get out on some ranches, and cowboyed a little bit this spring out in Nevada. And I'll meet people, and they'll say, well, what do you do on that ranch? And I'll say, well, you know, they gather up the cattle, and they put them in a big circle and rope them and brand them. Really? People still do that?
Yeah.
Isn't that just amazing? Just like you were saying, it's pretty underrepresented.
It's very underrepresented, and it causes me some great angst because of that. I get mad. I get angry because they want to celebrate everything else, you know, and then marginalize a portion of our own people. And I don't think that's right. And so I kind of went, yeah. And the fact is that people don't realize that ranching still goes on that way because it has to go on that way. There's no other way to do it.
There's no other way to do it.
No other way to do it. I mean, sure enough, you can use a pickup to a certain extent. You can use a four-wheeler to a certain extent. But you're going to get in places where that doesn't work anymore. And them cattle, that's where they're going to brush up. That's exactly where they're going to brush up. And if you had some of the sorry dogs that I've had, you can't count on them. So you got to get horseback and get up around them. That's just the deal.
And you did some of that growing up?
Oh, good God, yes. All my life I've done that. My bona fides go pretty deep, really. Yeah.
So whenever you are writing a song and you're thinking about telling, obviously I'm trying to ask you, tell me if I'm wrong here. A lot of your songs are specific about a certain story at a certain place, things like that. And then some of them are pretty vague, just about different people. But it seems to be a lot of the same type of people, like you're saying. But being a spokesman for that story that you're telling, mm-hmm. and telling it in the way you do, that's a pretty neat deal. And that gets out information to a lot of people that otherwise would have never really understood any of that.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, you know, that's kind of the... It's kind of, I mean, you do your art to do your art, but you hope that once it gets unleashed upon the world, that it does some good.
How does it feel? I know this has happened to you. If it hasn't happened to you lately, I'll tell you right now. But how does it feel to you to know that you wrote a song, you put it out there, and it helped change somebody's life for the better?
Oh, that's a huge thing. Every once in a while, I'll get an email or a letter or something that tells me about somebody who was over in Afghanistan and it got them through that, you know, and that's huge. I have a hard time even processing that. I really do. I just, it kind of floors you, you know, it just really backs you up and makes you quiet for a little bit. Yeah. It lets you know that, you know, maybe you're on the right track and you're accomplishing some good, and that's, what else can a guy ask for, you know?
We all need to be reminded of that now and then if we happen to get lucky enough to do that.
Yeah, yeah, if you happen to get lucky enough to do that, yeah, exactly right.
Because there's a lot of things you do that's just part of life everybody else does. You know, you have to do this, you have to do that. And every now and then you get a chance to do something impactful and you think, wow.
You just throw that stuff out there and... You know, like Sting says, there's a message in the bottle. You just throw it out there, and then somebody's going to pick it up and get something out of it, whatever it happens to be. And that's all anybody can ask for. You do the same thing when you're teaching these people how to handle their horses, how to have a better relationship with them. And, you know, maybe 2 weeks down the road or 2 months down the road or 2 years down the road, something that you said here this morning is going to click with somebody, and it's going to make their experience that much better, and they're gonna go back to that and remember that. Not only is their experience better, but their horses' experiences are better, and that's a big thing too.
That's an important thing.
You bet.
And I think something you said there was important, where it's not really up to you, for example, the songwriter, the performer, it's not really up to you to decide what they get out of it.
No.
You just put it out there.
Oh, no. It's none of your business.
And your business. And different people might get different things.
They will, and they do. They absolutely do. And I hesitate to tell this story, but because I don't mean it as a demeaning thing, but I have a line in my Vaquero song where I'm talking about my horse is sleek and dancing. We're all a man would need, right? And then I had a saddle maker in Utah. He didn't present me with the saddle, but he presented the saddle for my perusal. And it was a saddle that he had carved all these things on the saddle that had to do with that Vaquero song. He had done this. It was a gorgeous thing. It was beautiful. And there was two horses. It was two horses on the fenders. And I said, well, that's neat. There's horses. He says, yeah, that's sleek and dancing there. Oh, oh, I see. Okay. Well, so everybody takes what they need out of the song, or they receive that song in different ways. And to him, it was two horses, one named Sleek and one named Dancing. I wrote it as a description of my horses in general, but okay, that's fine. If that's what he received out of that song, well, that's brilliant. And he made a nice work of art out of it. But it taught me that it may not be what you intend when you put something out, but the fact that anybody receives something out of it is a good thing.
And how important is it, do you think, to give people that? I mean, of course, we're talking a little bit about you, but you can imagine that maybe in this situation, someone else that's made an impact on you with their poem or music or song or whatever it is they did. How important is it that people reach out and let them know?
It's always appreciated. It's appreciated. And I'm torn there because it's not their job to do that. You know, that's not their job. Your job is to put it out there. Their job is to receive it. Whatever they take from it is fine. It's not their job to come and be glowing back to you. That's it's nice when it happens, but it's not expected, and it's not, nor should it be. I don't think it should be. Yeah. You know, you do what you do, and you hope that it does some good out there. It's always nice to hear that it does.
Yeah, there's nothing owed there.
No, there's not. No, all an artist of any kind owes you is his art. That's all he owes you. And that's all an appreciator of the arts owes the artist is an appreciation. It's not necessarily something that has to be verbalized or expressed. As long as it's out there and does some good, that's all I care about.
So tell me, there had to have been some different people that impacted you, probably still do. I know, of course, I'm sure you hear this type of line a lot, but we all feel like we know you through your music in a way. And of course, we do know whatever part of you that you put out there. But I know you well enough to know that I know there's people that impact you still today that you're always looking towards. So tell me about a few of those people, maybe when you were younger or maybe still today.
You know, we're all products of our experiences, and I take a little something from everybody that has ever been down the pike. My influence goes deep, for all the way from Jimmy Rogers to Hank Williams to John Steinbeck. I take a little from everybody. As far as contemporary artists, well, there's Ian Tyson, of course. He was a very big influence, and he's a friend and a warm acquaintance, if you will. Tom Russell is another friend. Matter of fact, I'll be doing a train trip with him about a year from now, in next September.
There's some people that would pay to be right behind you guys on that train trip.
Me and Tom and Andy Hedges are going to be on that, from what I understand now. I just got the email on that. Tom and I go way back. We go, back 15, 20 years.
You've covered a few of those songs, I believe.
I can, but I don't know that I've recorded anything. I did their Navajo Rug on a cassette album I did back in the early 90s. That's how far back that goes. Just anybody who comes down the pike. John Prine, somebody like that. Leonard Cohen is another great influence. Anybody who's doing good work, well, they'll get a listen from me. I'll pay attention to it. But
there's one thing that you do right along these lines that we're discussing that I don't know if you've done it recently or not. I don't get on Facebook as much as I probably should. I'm trying to run my business. Yep. But I get on there and look at your deal, and you put on some exceptional songs, I believe is the way you put it.
I'll go back to that here pretty quick. Songs that don't get a lot of... Nobody in our business gets a lot of airplay. Marcel Marceau gets more airplay than I do. That's almost unheard of, although lately the Pandora thing has started to work for me pretty well. Which I didn't have anything to do with, but more and more people are coming up and saying, "Yeah, I found you on Pandora." Okay, well that's great. But anyway, a lot of my friends and people I know and songs that I've been aware of over the years, which had not been given the attention that they deserve, I just post it so people can hear them. And some astounding songs, really. There's some incredible stuff out there.
Yeah, there's a couple that, of course, some of those I've known have also loved that song. And there's a few you put on there that I'd never heard of. So that's just exactly the way to do it. I just thought it was really cool. Somebody that is writing great songs and making an impact on people is also saying, hey, here's some other good artists to check out. seems like in this world of marketing today, and I know you and I are in a similar way as far as just marketing what we do and trying to get people to come see us, and that can kind of get a guy worn out for a while too. So then when I see you up there promoting some other people as well, to me it just seems things are a little more, keeps you a little more grounded that day.
Well, it does. I mean, you look around to see what other people are doing and what they have done. And of course, then there's stuff that you've known about for years. Yeah, it keeps you grounded. You can't take anything for granted, and whatever it is you're practicing your art, and you're the same way, I know. And in fact, there's always something you can learn, always something you can learn, and something to that would help maybe help perfect what you do or help or add to what you do. And I mean, it's all fair game.
How long ago has it been since you did not have another job? How long have you just been doing this?
Oh, my. Been pretty close to 20 years.
20 years. So in that time, tell me about your business model.
My business model.
And how that's changed and what you're doing today.
Well, you know, in many ways it hasn't changed at all, because I still have to travel around and play for people. And that's what I've been doing for the last 25 years. You have to show up and do your show. And because I don't have any, though the internet has provided us all with machinery to run your business, to run your career. Had it not been for the internet, I probably wouldn't have a career. It's just, it sort of opened the floodgates to the true market, a free market kind of a thing, because it's there for you. You can use it. You have to deliver. You have to deliver your good, you know. And my business model, in as far as like, well, selling recordings or something like that, is the same as Baxter Black's is or has been, which is everybody's got a 20. That's it. That's my business model.
Everybody's got a 20.
Everybody's got a 20. So I've got all these CDs for sale, and I'll even give you $5 back. It's like McDonald's, you know, you get change back from your 20.
Yeah, exactly. I like it. So you mentioned that you got tired of just playing bars one after the other, one after the other.
Oh, good God, yes. That was in my early 20s, late teens, early 20s.
That's a lifestyle there that a lot of people don't really get out of.
It was pretty obvious that wasn't what I wanted. It wasn't getting me anywhere. And I got insulted by some drunk in the men's room of a cheap bar once too often. I said, I don't need this. I don't need this. This apparently is not going to be my deal. So I wandered off and tried to write novels, and then went to work for ranches and outfitters and stuff like that.
Tell us about some novels.
Oh, you don't. Yeah, you don't want to hear about that.
I wrote
over the course of about 10 years, I wrote 8 or 9 novels, all of which I would fight to the death to keep out of print right now.
That was part of your learning process, though, wasn't it?
It certainly was. It taught me how to write. That's the only reason I can write songs is because I learned how to write during that period of time.
You do have a book, though, within the last year or so. Am I correct? Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've got a book. It's called The First 25 Years. It's basically a songbook. It has all the stories on every song, and then there's other essays kind of ladled in there here and there. It's done well. I've been very happy with it.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I know you shipped a box out here. I think there were some CDs. So just so you guys know that are listening here, you'll hear this a little bit later, of course. But right now, we are in the middle of the ranch clinic that I'm doing here at Dublin Gap Ranch, and it's 10 days long, and we've got about 4 days left. And we were fortunate enough to get Dave to come out, and he's going to sing for us tonight. And he said, I asked him if he'd have time for a podcast. I've been bugging him about that. He said, you bet. So he said he could be here about 11. So I saw you drive by. I assumed it was you. I couldn't see your face, but I could see your hat on the dash of the rental car. And he drove, we were all out front riding, and I saw him go by and then turned in the driveway. I said, it must be him. So we got done. I got off a horse, handed my horse to the guys that are helping me here and the gals that are helping me here. And then I just walked right in here, and we're getting set up. So I'm excited, and he's going to be performing for us tonight. But he shipped a box in here the other day. It had some CDs and books and things like that. So we'll get it out. So everybody's going to get a chance
Brought a new one. I got a new one that just came out about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, great. New album. And what's it called?
Good Dog.
I did see that, actually. I haven't listened to it, but I did see that. Yeah. It's good. The last 2 weeks I've been busy here. It's good. It's been a busy time. Like you were saying about singing and about just singing different places and your business model, like you said, you just got to show up and do it. Show up and do the work. Right. So, for example, here I am this week. That's the biggest clinic I've had. But there's the first clinic here, there's three people. The next clinic, maybe there was eight.
I've played those audiences.
Right. And then you move on. The next clinic I'm flying to Alaska doing, there might be three people there. And
where in Alaska?
I'll be near Anchorage. I'll have to remember the name of the little town, but close to Anchorage. Yeah. I did a little horse expo up there a few years ago, and they don't have a lot of horses up there.
I was just going to say, I didn't think they had a whole bunch up there.
And the ones that are there, they try to do some things with them, but it's not easy. They're inside a lot in the wintertime like that. But anyway, I did a little horse expo, and it was a small crowd up there too.
Sure.
But the idea of performing for a small crowd versus a big crowd, of course it's different. But once again, I don't know you. I don't want to pretend like I do to the audience here, but I know you well enough to know that you're going to give the same show.
It'll be a little different because your thrust has to be a little different with a smaller crowd. It tends to be a lot more intimate, and sometimes it can be real fun.
It can be almost better.
Yeah, it can be, actually, yeah.
Unless you're just getting paid per the person that shows up, sometimes it's not as ideal. But the point is to be there, enjoy it.
I've had those days, too.
Somebody said to me once here, we had a small crowd one night. It was kind of cold. And I did my best to give the same clinic. And when I say the same show or same clinic, I just mean, of course, it's just going to be catered a little bit to the people that are there. But in general, you don't mope around for 3 hours.
Oh, good God, no. That's
wishing
no
there was people.
There's no point in that. That's nonsense.
And we've both seen people that have done that.
There's always that guy.
I'll tell people real quick what you said to me I called you about this date a long time ago, and I said something about coming back here, and what Dave said was, I don't get east of the Mississippi that much. And that's a pretty cowboy thing to say, you know, a Western thing to say. So have you been to Pennsylvania before?
No, never have. This is my first trip. But as I was telling some of your friends here, I did have an ancestor who got up here one time. Back during the Civil War, and he was captured at Gettysburg. But that's as close as my family ties go to this area. No, I've never been in this part of the country at all.
We just took a trip with part of this clinic. We quit early one day, and we drove to Gettysburg. It's an hour away, and we took a little horse carriage ride around the battlefield, and they told us all the history, and then we had dinner. It was a really neat deal.
Yeah, I plan to do that, not this trip, because my wife's not with me, and I need to. That would be not so good. I need to make sure she's with me if I go there.
If you do something fun, you're she's got.
Yeah,
be
she
ready.
Has to be here. I can't do anything fun when she's not here.
Yeah, that's the rule.
I have to be a monk.
I've heard about how that works when you're married. I don't know personally, but I've heard about some of those things.
Yeah, gear up for it. That's what happens.
Tell us about your wife. How long have you guys?
Oh my goodness, we've been together for it'll be 40 years next year. Yeah, so she should get a medal. Really, she should. She should get a medal, or at least be set up for canonization, something for putting up with me for 40 years.
Where did you guys meet?
We met. I was working for a guy who was married to a woman that she was working for, and so they put us together. Basically, it was one of those setups.
One of those setups
yeah,
that
you know,
actually worked.
Here's a blind date. You know, here you go.
But she can't see.
You know, she can see. Oh, yeah, she can see.
It was a blind date, but she can't see.
Yeah, we were both blind, but.
That's good. Dave, where did you grow up exactly? Where did you go to school at?
I went, I grew up in Montana until I was 12. We had a little ranch out east of Billings. We raised alfalfa hay and calves, and we sold alfalfa hay, little two-wire bales. For $25 a ton, and that was, we were going to own the whole state of Montana before we were through. And then when I was 12, the old man kind of went bust up there, and he'd married a California girl. And we sat around wondering what to do. Well, I didn't. I just sat around watching what was going to happen. My mother said, "Now we're out of here. We're going back to California." She had all the Montana winter she needed to have. And so we went down to the central coast of California, south of San Luis Obispo, and built a feedlot on 20 acres on a sand dune. Boy, we ended up with 200 head of feeder steers on 20 acres in a dry lot, which is like having, it's a little tight. It's a little tight. It's like having the entire cast of Riverdance perform on your kitchen counter. It's just really cramped.
Not any extra room.
There's no extra room. No, there was no extra room.
How old were you then?
I was 13, 14 until 1973, which was the big crash. And you can go back and talk to ranchers all over this country, and they'll tell you about 1973.
My grandfather was one of them. He talked about that.
That was, wow. I mean, there was some suicides over that thing. That was a big deal. Anyway, so there my old man was cut off at the knees twice in a row in within 5 years. So that ended his cow business at that point. So he got smart and decided, well, I'll go into the horse business. And he bought racehorses and everything else. Anyway, so that's where I finished my growing up. I went to high school in a little place called Rio Grande. As far as college, I didn't get there. We didn't have the financial wherewithal to make that happen. I wasn't inclined anyway.
What do you think about this talk? You hear people talking about trying to get the free universities for people, if things go well, in their view. I mean, that would be well.
I don't know. There's nothing free. I don't know how they're going to pay for it. It's. I'm always interested to hear what you got to say, but it's. I personally don't think. In a lot of ways, if you don't pay for something, you don't appreciate it. That's just my philosophy. I think you can appreciate it more if you have to work for it.
It seems to be the topic of a lot of stuff that I'm out there talking about with the horses and helping people there. And
yeah, you got to do the work.
There are people all the time, you know, like you're talking about, Baxter Black, and you mentioned that everybody's got a 20. Well, sometimes the clinics cost a little bit more than that.
Sure,
and sometimes there's people that are calling up, and you know, really, or maybe somebody comes and audits, and there's a 20. So they can come audit for a 20, and they show up, and, well, I'd really like to bring my horse and ride. And I say, well, let's do it. Well, I just can't do it right now. What's the matter? Well, I just can't afford it. Well, what can you do? What can you do? What can you trade me? What can you come do for me? What can you come help? Sure. Can you help? Can you clean the trailer out? Can you do this? Can you come work for me for a day? Can you do this? Can you do that? But if you give it to them, they don't appreciate it. That seems to be my experience too. And I've heard that from other people that I learned from.
I think that's just human nature.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of that going around, but it's good for people to be able to appreciate what they're doing. Because if they can't appreciate and put the work into it themselves, it's difficult for them to be able to pass that information on, for sure.
Well, it's difficult to claim the payoff if you don't have any skin in the game. I don't understand how you can, but I'm a dinosaur.
Yeah. I will have to admit, when I said that, David kind of had a look on his face like, I'm not into politics.
I really am not. I really don't like to go there.
And that's all good. So you said you're a dinosaur. So you've got a flip phone here on the table in front of us.
Yeah, I still carry a pocket watch.
You're a holdout on that.
Yeah. I've the older I get, the more I revert back into the simpler stuff.
There's a lot that can be gained from that. It's keeping things simple there.
I'm easily distracted. So let's minimize the distractions.
Well, and I think the stats are showing out there that people are getting more than just distracted with these things, because people have a hold of them all the time, and I've been accused of being one of them at times, for sure.
I heard there was a resurgence of the flip phone. I was hearing recently, yeah.
I've read some things. There's some studies out there that have been talking about, of course, the technology companies aren't wanting to get this information out there, but yeah, people are healthier that are using those smartphones, or those flip phones, better than the smartphones.
All I have it for is to make a phone call.
What else do you need?
If I want to send an email, I got a computer.
Got a computer for that.
got a computer for that. I even travel with a little laptop if I need to take care of business. But, you know, that can be a pain in the butt to crank out.
Sometimes.
Put the little rod in there and wind it up.
Wind it up. Get the battery going. Everything's good. Get it all juiced up. I went into the print shop here in Newville, Pennsylvania a while back. I asked the guy, I wanted to print off some flyers for your concert tonight. And I walked in and I said, I had it on my phone, on an email. Of course, I had the flyer that a friend of mine made there. I said, can I email you this? And then you print it off. And that guy said, the manager's not here today, and I'm not real good with these computers, but let me go see if I can get it warmed up.
Get it warmed up, yeah.
And he turned around the corner, and I thought, what kind of computer did he have back there?
He got had a little squirrel running a wheel.
Got a squirrel in the wheel going along.
A hamster.
So you've been talking about using the laptop when you're doing some little things. Is that part of your writing process? You write something out, you print it a laptop. Sometimes you get an idea, you write it down on the airplane napkin, like on the movies.
Yeah, that's absolutely. I do a lot of that. I've written songs on sick bags on airplanes.
Oh yeah, I put a book together a few years back, and once you get a thought and you get to work on that thought, whatever's in front of you, you got to do it for you.
Got to write it down. Absolutely, yeah. But no, I don't work on the computer with writing my songs. I tried to in the past. I never could get it done. I work to keep my image as a dinosaur intact. I work as much on a manual typewriter as I do anything else. I've got a collection of them, and I use them every day.
Manual typewriters.
I grew up learning how to type on one of those things. And even in high school, they actually had typing class where you go in there and have to bang away on those things. And them big old Underwoods or Royals or something. And then, of course, when I was writing my novels and everything else at the time, this is going way back in the early 80s. Well, I mean, that's still the technology we had at the time. So that got ingrained in my head as this is what it feels like and smells like to write. And that's the tactical thing, the tactical end of it. You know, for me, it's you know, whatever it takes. If you need to wear a red Bozo the Clown hat and sit facing the corner in a little desk, that's what it needs, you know. If you got to wear funny shoes, if that's what it takes for you to get the job done, that's what you need to do, and then produce the work, and then you can dress normally after that's done.
Or comfortable shoes.
Or comfortable shoes.
Absolutely. I heard a song about that one.
Absolutely right, which I have on even right now.
Yeah, there you go. Most of the time, that's what I'm wearing.
Most of the time, you bet.
It's funny. I'll find myself now. Well, I always kind of have, but the last few years especially, I'll change out of my riding boots into something more comfortable. But even at lunch break here at the clinics, when I'm just going to town in the clinics, I do it as often as I can.
You bet.
But I like keeping those leather sole boots when I'm riding.
Oh, well, you got to.
At least something small. So some of those songs, Comfortable Shoes, one of those songs, is just kind of, it's a funny song. You know, you've got some good songs that are kind of like that and make people laugh. And you've got a few that are, of course, you've got a lot that are serious about something that's real. You've got a couple that are, one could even maybe say dark.
I've got a few of those, yeah.
And I've always been a little attracted to those type of songs, you know. That's kind of neat. I think, obviously, there's always people probably telling you which songs this or that. But, you know, I remember when I've heard a few of your songs, and I heard South Coast, and that kind of got me hooked for a little while, you know, singing some of that.
Written by a gal from Big Sur country in California named Lillian Boss Ross. That's a dark one.
It's kind of an interesting thing when you meet, of course, I don't know her, you know, that wrote the song, but there are other ones that you've written similar, and it's when you meet somebody who's a positive, happy person, and they can write something like that, that kind of shows the other side of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a little bit of both in all of us, right?
Of course there is. And you got to write that stuff when you have to accept all songs. That's just the deal. Otherwise, they quit coming.
You have to accept all songs. Otherwise, they quit coming.
Right.
I like that.
It's true. Absolutely. All ideas must be accepted.
All ideas, yeah. Yeah, because if we don't have one, we can't have the other. The next thing you know, it's all just the one. And then who's to choose which one that is?
That's right.
So what do you hear out there today on the radio?
I don't hear anything on the radio. I'll just cut you off right there. I don't even listen to it anymore. I literally don't. I can't stand it. it all has become such a caricature. The litmus test for that is may have been even 20 years ago when that movie Brother, Where Art Thou? Remember when that came out? And it was an old-timey sounding soundtrack, and it sold 1 million copies. I thought, yeah, that's great. That's great. Maybe we're going to go back to some authentic music. And even some of the critics in the industry asked the Nashville people, I'm using air quotes, is this going to change the direction of the music that you produce in Nashville, the success of this? And they said, no, we have our demographic. We know what we want. And their demographic is a 30-year-old mother of two, happily married. That's their demographic, because that 30-year-old mother of two, happily married, also controls the purse strings. And so that's why they want, and they have told me this, 3-minute upbeat positive love songs. That's all they want. Yeah, that was it. And I thought, well, we're chingered there, you know. I don't know if you can say chinger on a podcast, but
we can say whatever we want. It's my podcast.
That was it. That was absolutely it. And now it's not even original anymore. They're sort of doing sad copies of previously popular songs. I mean, where everything is I really like it when you wear shorty shorts and cut off jeans and we drink beer and get in my truck.
That sums up most of them, doesn't it?
That's it. That's all there is to it. And I don't think half these people are from the South, but boy, they sure put it on, you know, they sure put it on. And I can't stand it. I can't stand listening to it. Absolutely can't stand it. And there's probably some really good songs coming out that I'm missing because of that. But I don't listen to the radio. I listen to stuff on Pandora. I'll search stuff out myself, you know, and find it and listen to it and buy the albums by these unknown people. And it's a shame that a lot of them don't get the opportunity to be heard, because it was always that way in a certain extent, you know. So, but no, I don't hear anything on the radio I like.
And when do you think that started?
Oh, good God.
Because when you were a young man, you listened to
the radio. Oh, good, yes. Oh, my goodness, yes. It was probably started for me in the late 80s, I think I stopped listening to that stuff. Because it used to be, back when I was a kid, within the first few notes of any song on the radio, you knew who it was that was singing it. You knew what the song was. There was no doubt about it. You knew all the singers. You knew all the material that they did. And even when they came out with something new, well, that's still Johnny Cash, that's still Merle Haggard, that's still whoever. And you always knew who they were. I couldn't tell you who any of these guys are. They all sound alike. Even the gals all sound alike. And all the gals have to be these semi-voluptuous, scantily clad vixens on stage. And that's as much a part of their talent as the music is. And I think that's sad. That's such a sad thing. The art of making a song and connecting with people with just the song is going by the wayside. Well, it's not going by the wayside. It's not being paid attention to the way it once was.
Not as popular.
Yeah. I mean, you look at James Taylor. James Taylor's been around forever. He can still do it. He can still do it. He does it very, very well. But even the guitar is not as popular as it once was. It's all computer-generated music and stuff like that. But that's okay. The people who listen to the stuff that we do like the stuff that we do. So there's room for everybody, I guess.
I think that was a great way to sum that up, because I agree 100%. There's room for everybody. Like mm-hmm. you said about the different songs, pick both kinds. If it works for them and they enjoy it, let them enjoy it.
Nothing wrong with it.
You know, it's hard for me sometimes. For example, you know, I told them about you coming here. And of course, a lot of people that are my friends know who you are. Maybe have known you longer than me. And then there's new people now. And then I'm saying, hey, you got to come out to this concert. We got this guy coming, or check him out. Here's the stuff on YouTube. And they go, what kind of music is it? Of course, there is a title for it, but that's hard to answer today. And for me, I find that same question similar when people ask me, well, what kind of clinic are you teaching? Like, what are you teaching? you know, and there's words that people use that kind of are an umbrella word that's supposed to maybe cover you in there, but it's not just 100% fit into that label.
Well, it shouldn't be. Nobody should be 100% fit into the label because everybody offers something a little bit different. It's the secret of taking from whoever it is you're paying attention to, taking from it what you need at the time, seeing if you can use it. Music, suggestions on how to handle your horse or whatever, how to open the drain in your in your bathroom, you know. It's whatever you need at the time.
Trying to put people into labels is probably a big part of the problem.
Sure has been going on for a long time, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. It sure has been going on for a long time. Yeah, that's for sure. So what's next for Dave Stamey?
Well, I've got about 2 months of work left this year. I will sort of, I always do this. I always shut down in mid-November, and I stay shut down until about the second or third week in January. So I'm going to have a little time off, and quite frankly, I'm not going to do anything with it other than rest and kind of catch up on stuff I need to do around the place. Because I'm tired. I put out a CD this year. I put out a book last year. My wife asked me the other day, she said, well, you've started writing the next one. And I said, leave me alone. I'm tired.
I can imagine.
I've got a lot of work lined up for 2020 already, and I get to keep doing it for a while, apparently. So it's just more of the same, basically, just more of the same.
You kind of hit on this, of course, and I don't mean to hammer it in there, but I mean, how lucky do you feel sometimes just to be able to do this?
Immensely lucky, amazingly lucky. I'm a very, very fortunate man. There's a lot of people who would love to do what I do, and I just happened to fall into a place where I was able to cultivate an audience, and I feel really, really fortunate to have had that happen.
I know there's a little bit of a balance there, and of course you and I are in different, little different situations, but both of us similarly to, you know, trying to grow and promote a business a little bit. You've been at it a little longer than I have. But there is a balance there sometimes, I know for me, and I probably need to always be pushing back this way to find my own kind of middle where I'm good there, but staying humble, feeling lucky, like you just said, but then also every now and then, that word used to bug me a lot when somebody would say, oh, you're so lucky you get to go there. You're so lucky you get to go there. And you want to go, well, you know, I did kind of choose to do that, and I kind of worked hard to get there. And then you let that creep in, and you kind of push that back out. No, you're right. You're right. I am lucky. Sometimes that's a balance to find because you've worked very hard to get to where you are.
But at the same token, let's see, how do I want to put this? The old adage about if you find something you love to do, you'll never work another day in your life, that does, quite frankly, that's a bunch of bullshit.
You bet.
Because if you find something you really love, you will work your butt to the bone and enjoy it, but you will work. You will work your butt to the bone. And you'll work harder at that than you ever worked at a normal job at any point in your life. I don't care if you dug ditches. You will still work harder. You will put more into it. Because it matters to you. It's like we go back to what we were talking about. If you don't put the work in, how do you appreciate what you have?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, you brought that back perfectly because that's what we mentioned that earlier, and that's exactly what we're talking about. Because if you didn't put the work in, you wouldn't appreciate the life you have now.
Right.
Yeah, that seems to be. And it seems like there might also be, I'll be the devil's advocate here for just a second there. There's also some people that listen to that and go, well, then I guess what I'm doing, I need to change to something else because I can't figure out how to be happy. And sometimes it's figuring out how to be happy with what you have, isn't it?
It sure is. There are people who, and I know there's the majority of people, who would look at what you do or look at what I do and say, why would you want to do that?
Right. For sure.
Why would you want to do that? And it's not even in their, it's not on the menu for them. It's not even something that wouldn't even perk their interest. But there has to be something that you want to do, that you, even if it's just to do your job better, whatever that job happens to be, there's a matter of pride in anything. And I don't know the answer to that. I'm pretty sure everybody has a calling of some sort. It's just a matter of finding what it is that makes you happy and going for it. Work your little hind end off at it. You know, whether that's having the best yard in town or whatever it is, you know.
Whatever floats your boat.
Whatever floats your boat. I know a person that absolutely loved to train dogs. Okay, there you go. That's your happy spot. That's your deal.
This morning we had, I don't remember when you pulled in, but so there's a friend of mine, a couple, they brought two little border collie puppies this week. And my friend Sabrina, she works with dogs quite often. Uh-huh. She's a vet tech and knows a lot about dogs, but she also works with training them a little bit too. So what we did is we brought the cows in and just kind of rodeered out in the pasture there. And of course, we've got a lot of horses and a few heifers, so it worked out pretty good for our clinic today.
Managed to keep them contained.
To keep them contained. But then she brought the puppies out and just introduced them to the cows, moved them around, and just got them kind of see if they'd kind of
lock up. How old were the pup?
I'm thinking around 4 months.
Oh, goodness.
So, I mean, I call them puppies, of course, weaned and all that. But, yeah, it was really cool. We actually brought two big pig red steers. We've got two big Hereford steers and brought those in 2 days ago, and that was the first time they'd seen it in the indoor. And we messed around, and she got them to walk up a little and basically got them to stop. Kind of a couple of them was like, I'm out of here. And then today we went out there, and one of them was really going towards the cows. The other one wasn't quite as sure, but it was really neat seeing that start. It's so cool to see those.
See them wake up.
See those things change, you know.
Yeah, see them wake up. Turn on.
You've had some dogs when you were younger working at some of those places?
Oh, I've never had any good dogs. I've had some okay good dogs. I always tell the story that I had a dog there, and I was riding with a guy named Emery Johnston, who works on has a ranch out there in the Cuyama Valley in Central California there. I know we were gathering or doing something, and I had a dog with me. He says, is that a good dog? And I said, yeah, he's a pretty good dog. Emery says, psh, I got a whole ditch full of pretty good dogs.
Yikes.
Yeah, no, so I've never had a really, really good dog.
It's really cool to see those things work and the similarities between what they're doing and what we're doing with the horses and what they're doing. Try to get them to change their mind.
Well, there's a similarity in a lot of it, yes, in the fact that there's a lot of people who are real proud of their dogs who shouldn't be. And I've had a lot of them put steers through the fence, you know, put calves through the fence when it wasn't quite necessary to be that aggressive at that point. You know, we got them. They're up against the fence. We're moving them to the corral. Everything's fine. Call your dogs off.
A lot of people proud of their dogs that shouldn't be.
Yeah, or they have the old Pat Richardson poem. The end of it is how much would it cost for you and your dog to stay home next time?
How much would it cost if you just don't come help us?
You just don't come. Watching you come up with that dog's like watching three or four good guys ride off.
Yeah, that's how it goes. So as you kind of approach towards the end of the year, getting ready to take a little break, like you said, a little bit this winter and catch up on some things at home, you're able to look back and see a lot of the people that you kind of were able to meet this year. And you probably get to meet a lot of new people often. I mean, here you are out here. And how often do you go to new places versus some of the places you kind of go regularly?
Oh, probably 30% of the time I'm going to new places, which is, I really like that. I like that a lot.
Got to have that.
Absolutely, you got to have that. I like to open things up much, much more than playing the same old thing. Although I do have my little circuit that I've built. I have about a year and a half worth of regular work. My goal is to have 2 years worth of regular work so that I can do everything every other year. That way you can always expect somebody to come out. Whereas if I'd rather have it be, where's Dave, than, oh, it's Dave again. So that's kind of what I'm working toward.
So the last couple of years, I've kind of my business model is kind of where I'm traveling now. So I go somewhere new every month or two. I don't really have a home base anymore. I'm probably here in Pennsylvania more than I am anywhere, but I travel quite a bit somewhere new. And I kind of joke around, but I feel the same way you just said. I'm kind of always want. I'd rather have leave thinking with the people thinking, wonder when he's coming back, rather than, oh, he's still here.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, and there's a human nature kind of a thing that falls into play there, you know, where if you're available all the time, you must not be any good, which is not necessarily true. But as most brick and mortar businesses will tell you, that's not necessarily true. But in our line of work, it kind of is. You have to have people want you to show back up. Yeah, it's an interesting dichotomy.
Well, Dave, I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to having you perform for us tonight and how much I appreciate you taking the time to come out here and sing for us. If there's something you wanted to leave the audience with here on the podcast, whether it's about you or whether it's about something you've kind of learned over the years that maybe you can impart a little bit with them, what would it be?
Just take a breath and be nice to each other. That's it.
That's a pretty good line right there. Well, I appreciate you being here. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Dave Stamey, and we'll talk to you next time. If you're enjoying the Horses and Life podcast, there are many ways you can support it. You can obviously tell people about it. You can tell your friends about it. You can share it through social media or any other means. You can go to patreon.com and support it financially. There's a little more information on my website about the podcast. Also on my website, calmiddleton.com, please be sure you sign up for my monthly newsletters through my email subscription list. Until next time, enjoy each day.